overflowing with love. I am overflowing with happiness. I am filled with the power to make a change, to create a brand new life. I am.
Welcome to the podcast of the Sunday Celebration from the Center of Spiritual Living in Huntsville, Alabama. We hope you feel the grace, the beauty, and the love of our community as you hear the message of the week.
Thank you so much. Last year, or the last time we went to Circle of Love Gathering, the beloved Karen Drecker was there, and she had just written this song, You Can Change the World One Heart at a Time. And I remember she walked down into the audience, and she sang, You can change the world, and she went all through the audience, one heart at a time. And then she said to me, I have to go back to Santa Rosa after she left Circle of Love, and she was to speak in the big church there. They have it in a bowling alley. Don't you love it? Because it's a big church. And she said, what should I do? What should I do? And I said, do exactly what you did at Circle of Love. They were having fires. Go figure. Fires in Northern California. And remember Paradise completely burned down? That's right near Santa Rosa. And so what was happening there is kind of the phenomena when someone is suffering, other people come out to help them. You can change the world. So it was bringing the people together in the heart. And isn't that what we're here to do, to bring each other together in the heart? I'm talking about A Rendezvous with Love this Sunday. And the reason I chose that as the subject is because that's what we're going to be doing at Banning Mills this weekend at the Circle of Love Gathering. And the reason I call it A Rendezvous with Love was because the very last event that we did, I called Etika Luckett, and I said, we were coming to California, and I said, I don't know what we're going to call our event this year. We always have a theme. The alchemy of love. It's always something with love. And Etika Luckett said, we'll call it A Rendezvous with Love. And then, of course, we know Etika is no longer here on the planet, but she's still here in my heart. And so I thought, every time I say that, A Rendezvous with Love, I feel that she's alive in me. Because isn't that what it's all about? When you come here to the center, it's a rendezvous with love. I mean, that's all I feel from all of you. It's not your love or my love, it's the love. And when we realize that we are this love of the universe, you know, it's funny, in the bookstore, in the classroom over there, there's an old printout of a newsletter we used to do called Growing Aware. When I was a brand new center 30 years ago, they said, we need a newsletter. And this is when you would use snail mail and you would mail it to the people. And that's an old cover of one of the Growing Aware. And there's a very young looking David Leonard 30 years ago. And there's a quote that I put up there. And I always find myself chuckling when I read the quote. It says, the stages of spiritual growth. First, you believe in Santa Claus. Second, you don't believe in Santa Claus. Third, you are Santa Claus. First, you believe in this thing called God, some form outside yourself. You pray to it. Now I lay me down to sleep. I pray the Lord my soul. That's a horrible prayer. If I should die before I wake, what does that mean? You know, and you're taught about a Santa Claus God in the sky. And then if you're a smart kid like I was and you begin to question like little Terry Hartman did, you decide, I don't want a God like that. I don't want a God who will destroy the planet and then create a rainbow. Come on. What kind of a God is that? Kill off everybody, save a couple of dinosaurs and a couple of elephants and a couple of tsetse flies and a couple of mosquitoes, you know, and then, yeah, who wants that kind of God? And then, if you're like me and you've completely abandoned that which makes no sense, then there's something that is real, there's something that is true, there's something that is beyond the mind that conceptualizes and it begins to awaken. And if you're fortunate enough to have had many two-by-fours in life, that thing that awakens is love itself. And boy, when you step on the wave of love, it takes you into itself. I was saying to my beloved Greg Ledford, are you here in the room, Greg? There he is, way back in the back. I was listening to a Gangaji tape. She's one of my teachers, one of my loving teachers. And she said, true confession, she said, I was a student of truth for 20 years plus. And then I made a cry out to the universe. I really want a teacher. And when you make a demand, she found herself in India with Papaji. And Papaji was the embodiment of what did you call it, Bill Savoy? You called it omnipresence. She felt the omnipresence of love in this teacher. But the first thing she did was she projected onto the teacher that he was the omnipresence of love. And I am suckling on his truth. You know, I felt that I was the child and he was the teacher and I was drinking from the teacher. So I had put the love outside me in the guru. And of course, the guru all the time says, it's not me. The very thing that you're seeing is the love that's awakening within you. But, she said, just like so many people who were in love, I wanted to objectify the love. I wanted that to be the source of that love. And that's what so many of us do. And then if you're really lucky, the universe will take that form away from you. So, I used to believe in love. I did. I believed in love when I was a freshman in college, and I thought I found the love of my life. And that love affair lasted till my senior year in college. And when it ended, my heart was absolutely broken. I thought I was over the hill. I was 22. Who will ever love me again? And so I went to that second stage where I did not believe in love. And anybody that would say, I love you, I said, oh, love does not exist. And I was very clear on that until I met John Stoddard, the one person I hated in the whole universe. And then I realized that love and hate are two sides of the same coin. There's equanimity here. And when the love fell away, then there was this natural thing that began to flower within my soul. And it wasn't him as the object of love. It was that he was awakening the love within inside myself. And so for the next 45 years, this love has continued to awaken, continued to flower. And last week I talked about, we're speaking on this month, Glimpsing the Divine. Again, another song of Lisa Ferraro and Etta Gluckett, to glimpse the divine, to see it everywhere. And last week I said, awakening one glimpse at a time, you get lovers that come to you. Last Sunday was the year anniversary of Baby Speck's death. And, you know, Trey and I, we take our dogs for long walks. We have a disdain for people who just let their dogs out because the dogs love to go for walks. So if you have a dog, take them for a walk. It's their highlight of their whole life, isn't it, Jane? I mean, they just live for it. When Trey was out of town, they would sit and wait at the door because I'd go to Jane's and we'd take the dogs out. And they'd wait because maybe they wanted to see her. So it got earlier and earlier that they, I said, Jane, they're sitting at the door. They're waiting to go. And there's something about that love. So we were walking the dogs this week and I said to Trey, I said, you know, everywhere I go, I see the baby. And he said, so do I. So what if the mystery of love is that the love never dies, the form leaves us? Now, having said that, there is a movie, and I don't normally talk about movies, but Trey gave me an option. We hadn't been to a popcorn movie in, I think it was a whole month. We go once a month to a movie. And he says, you got two options. We're going to go see Harriet, about Harriet Tubman and, you know, that thing. Or we can go see a Christmas movie. And he knows I love Hallmark, Christmas Channel. And I said, so to watch the dogs barking as slaves flee, or to have a Hallmark Christmas movie, I said, let me have the Hallmark Christmas movie, because I just wanted warm fuzzies. And it's called The Last Christmas by the George Michael song. The whole movie was written by Emma Thompson, that wonderful actress, and boy, can she write a script. And the last Christmas, I gave you my heart. The very next day, you gave it away. This year, without all the tears, I'll give it to someone special. Now, the bad thing about seeing the movie is you can't get that song out of your head. I have been singing that song for 48 hours, and even Trey is singing it, but he doesn't know lyrics, so he has all the wrong lyrics. It's kind of fun when the two of you are singing the song. But it points to a love that is so much deeper than this human love. Even though the human love is what we're caught up in the stickiness of it, there is a love that never dies. And it points to that in such a beautiful way that, you know, you feel like it changes you. You begin to relate at an invisible level, the mystery of love, the love that's so much bigger. Am I cutting in and out? It feels like it, so I'll step up on the stage and walk away. This is a book I've had for 30 years. It's called For the Love of God. What are you going to do, Al? You're going to adjust me? Okay. Okay, Al, thank you. Okay, good. Get the popping out of there. Is that better? So this is filled with all kinds of people, teachers, who have fallen into the vortex of love, and love has transformed their lives. And so I pulled out David Stendel Rast, who's this Benedictine monk who has a simple practice. He says, every night when I go to bed, I give thanks for something that I haven't previously given thanks for. I have a little journal by the side of my bed. And there's something about living in a grateful heart. You know, this is November. Usually I speak on gratitude for the whole month. This is where we give thanks at the end of the month through a thing called Thanksgiving. And so what if when you're grateful for everything, even what Greg's going through, you're grateful for everything, then you find that grace is in the midst of it. So it's not just about having warm, happy, fuzzy love affairs with life. Sometimes it's having your heart broken and knowing that the heart was meant to be broken so that something greater could emerge within you. And so it's so funny, on the Zen calendar, there are no accidents. Everything is on purpose, absolutely everything. And when you know that everything is on purpose, that everything you created at some level, well, then instead of resisting it and blaming it and trying to treat it away or see it as a problem to be fixed, you hold it, you embrace it, and then you realize it was love calling you all along. So here's what the universe said to me yesterday. It was John Muir. He said, the mountains are calling and I must go. So a rendezvous with love with John Muir would be going to the mountains. Anybody a mountain person besides me? Do they have a lure and a beauty and a healing power? Trey and I go up every day to Monte Sano, which means the sacred mountain, I think. And as we drive in through the gates, Bert's sitting in the back seat, Humphrey's on my lap, and this old man comes out at the gate and he says, where's Bert? Well, where's Bert? And he goes over and he's called. He's in love with Bert. Oh, hi, Bert. Oh, and he just talks baby talk to Bert. And sometimes Bert doesn't like to be fawned on, so Bert goes over to the other side of the seat. And when the old guy comes out to get his little love of Bert, he says, Bert, don't you like me anymore? He says, oh, well. So we go to the mountains, and we go down these remote trails, and the dogs sniff, and they have just the most delightful time. And then when we're finally ready to go, Bert says, well, I'm not sure I'm ready to go. You know, I like to stay here and just sniff around a little bit more and lie under the tree and lift my leg here and lift my leg there. And, you know, I like to mark the whole place. Yeah. So here's today. Today was Rumi. He says, you are not a drop in the ocean. You are the entire ocean in the drop. We've sold ourselves small. We think we're a separate drop in this ocean of life, but the whole ocean of love exists within us. Well, that's a hell of a lot of love, isn't it? So we don't need one other drop. I know, drop, you've got two drops there, but really it's the ocean of love meeting itself. T and Shay are going to be speaking when I'm at the Circle of Love, because I wanted someone to reflect the Anamkara. When you find the Anamkara, which is your soul friend, it's the ocean meeting the ocean. It's not two drops coming together, even though at times I would consider them drops, but mostly I see the ocean of love flowering. So here is beloved David Stendel Rast. I think I can do this without my specs. Every now and then I can do it, dude. He talks about love, and he says, when love is genuine, belonging is always a natural thing. He says, the beloved belongs to the lover, and the lover belongs to the beloved. We use that phrase, beloved. That's divine love. So we think of ourselves as this separate little drop, but really the universe, the universal love is in this wave, and it's the beloved that's within me. So when we say the beloved in me bows to the beloved in you, it's the presence of love within me is meeting the presence of love in you. And it's not a love that's attaching. It's not a love that you earn or you can get more of. It's a love that you already are. So here's this Benedictine monk talking about that very thing. So he says, I belong to this universe and to the divine yes that is the source of it all. And this belonging is also mutual. That is why I can say, my God, not in a possessive sense, but in a sense of a loving relatedness. Now, if my deepest belonging is mutual, could my most fervent longing be mutual too? There's inquiry. If I love God so deeply, is it possible that this divine presence loves me too? He's asking. And then he responds, well, it must be so. He says, staggering though it is, what I experience as my longing for God is God's longing for me. Wow, that's pretty powerful. Anybody feel that ache, that sweet ache of being alive, that there's something more? There's something more than striving and struggling and trying to find it in this one or that one, that there is this love affair with the universe? Wow, you talk about a rendezvous with love. It's your destiny to be this love. And he goes on to say, one cannot have a personal relationship with an impersonal force. It says in the Bible, how can you love God whom you have not seen if you cannot love your fellow man whom you have seen? Right? So there's that beautiful question. What if this is all the divine presence? And it comes in every form imaginable. Whoa. He said, one cannot have a personal relationship with an impersonal force. That's true. So I must not project on God the limitation of a person. And yet, this divine source must have all the perfections of personhood. Where else would I have gotten them from? So here's this beautiful little Benedictine monk saying the universe is longing for you. And sooner or later, isn't there a song, sooner or later, love is going to get you? Yeah. If you really want the real kind of love. You know, if you don't want that imitation love. And he talks about how the ego can't love because the ego, that little part of us, it has an idea of love. It compartmentalizes. It makes something outer the source of that love. And it can never be the outer that's the source of that love. It's something much bigger. So I'll take you to the gardener who had, he's my guru too. And he tells these little vignettes and this couple came to him and they wanted to talk about love. And he was complaining that his wife wasn't loving him enough. It was the personal love that he was struggling with. Anybody have personal love relationship issues? Anybody? Oh, you lot. Thank you. We have one. And the rest of you are in denial, and that's not a river. So here's the man. He's complaining about his wife. I'm looking for happiness, and I thought I would find it living with her. But of course, she didn't meet his expectations of what the love should be. And so he was verklempt and complaining that she was not the perfect. Your mistake has been in each of you having looked for happiness and love outside yourself and in your partner. No, I know none of you ever do that. And he says, well, what am I supposed to do now? He asked the wise gardener, and the gardener said, look for happiness within yourself, and don't hope that it is she who has to give it to you, because you cannot ask anybody to give you what you yourself must acquire. So look for the love that you once felt in your heart, and find your pleasure only in that, and not in the love that she can feel for you. And absorb life through every pore of your skin, whether it is peaceful and happy or whether it is painful and sad. There's equanimity in love. And sometimes the saddest moments are the most loving moments in your life. That first lover that I told you about in college, the most intimate moment we had was when I came back from class and the girls that lived in the apartment took our little dog Ruffles out for a walk, didn't have her on a leash, and Ruffles got run over. And when I came back from class, that was probably the most intimate, loving experience I ever had when the two of us fell in each other's arms and cried over the loss of a dog. See? So sometimes love is in those moments where we're sad and painful because I'm tearing now and I can't read. Because in the total acceptance of life, with its magnificent days and its also dark nights, one encounters the happiness that does not pass. And that one is the safe haven, protected from storms and rough weather. To love in the in-between times. We taught a class here years ago, M. Scott Peck's The Road Less Traveled, and he says, when the myth of romantic love dies, then the true love begins. So what if the true love really oftentimes surfaces in those moments of pain and sadness when your heart is broken wide open and you're not looking for the warm fuzzies in your partner, you're looking for two arms to hold you in that embrace that's the rendezvous with love. Wow. A rendezvous with love, a love that's always there. Okay, now we're going to non-dual love. What do you mean non-dual? Non-dual teachings teach that it's all one. So you can't say that there's love over here and there's fear over here, or there's God over here or the devil over here. In Carl Jung's last book called The Answer to Job, I love how he starts with a question and then he always gives the answer. He said in Job, he says, it can't be God and the devil. You know, that's one of the most ancient books in the Bible, the book of Job. And it's where God and the devil are having an argument. Do you have one devout person? And he points to Job, you know, the whole story of Job sitting on the ash pile and doing all that. Carl Jung makes the statement that God and the devil have to be one, that the darkness and the light have to be one. And so we can't talk about powers of good and powers of evil, because what if they all exist within us? Heaven and hell are states of consciousness that we all have at time to time. And for those to awaken, and so the paradox of love is that love is here to break us wide open. Love is not here to just make us feel so warm and fuzzy, even though that's what I would like to do every Sunday morning. But I want to remind you, and this is Jeff Foster's book, The Joy of Meditation, where he talks about how love will break your heart open. And this is a good thing. And he says, when love cracks you wide open, he says, love does not always feel safe because love is pure potential and it's pure presence. And in pure presence, every feeling and impulse is welcome, however gentle, however painful, however inconvenient, however fierce. So when you let someone matter to you and you let yourself matter to someone and you're not ruled by fear that your heart will have no choice but to crack to the hugeness of love, you will not be able to control the results, and that's why the ego cannot love. The ego wants to stay in control, and if you're going to surrender to love, you've got to surrender to something you can't control. So are you willing to surrender to love? How many are willing to surrender to love? Yeah. Now that means that we have to let go of the very thing that we're trying to control, because you can't surrender to love and say, yeah, but it's got to look this way or it's not going to be acceptable to me. Surrendering to love is 100%. So he goes on to say, they lied to you about love, you see. They said it was always supposed to feel good and warm and happy. And they said it was something you'd be given, something that you'd have to earn or deserve. They said it was all butterflies and angels and light. But really, it was always you, naked, raw and alive, cracked, whole, vulnerable, shaky, but real, inhaling a cosmos, exhaling the euphoria and the darkness and the grief and the joy of humanity, and sometimes not knowing what the hell you're doing or how you're still alive. Right on. I'm still alive. I had a massive heart attack. I'm still here. Boy, that does something to you. It really does. You know, you want to speak the truth. I didn't say the word hell. It's right here in the script. Of course, we don't say that word here at the center, do we? So he says, so breathe. All is unfolding beautifully here. And love is not only gain, but love is also loss. The beloveds will die and the loved ones will vanish, but love will not. Love will not. I was talking to Teresa. I feel like I'm haunted by this dear friend of ours, Vandana Srivastava. Her picture's in my office. How many years ago was it? 15? At least. And yet she's still here. I have a photograph of my mom in our bedroom. And, you know, do you feng shui? Anybody feng shui their houses? Oh, good. Well, we had a feng shui woman here, and she made me feng shui. She taught me. And in the right-hand corner of your room, that's the love corner. So, like, if in your bedroom, in the right-hand corner, that's where you put your love pictures. So there's my deceased mom and my dad and my brother who's now deceased and some people and some animals. And every night I go to sleep, I feel the love of them. And it's they may be gone in form, but they're still here. The beloveds will die, the loved ones will vanish, but the love will not. So she will simply make you rise, you see, and fall again, and wonder again if you will ever rise. She will open you and close you and break you and humble you and laugh at your childhood fantasies about love. Childhood fantasies about love. You know, it's not outside you. That's the biggest fantasy of all. If you can't find love within, that's what the gardener was saying, your wife is not going to bring you the love. You have to find it in here. So, but it's all natural, he said, and it's all here for you. What you're going through, Greg, is here for you. What I went with the heart attack is for me. Those uncomfortable things that you're experiencing are not something that's happening to you. They're not a problem to be fixed, but they're an opportunity for the alchemy of love to be revealed. That's why I was hoping that Greg could come to our Circle of Love gathering, but he's going to come to California when his heart gets all spiffed up, because there's something about being in that field of love. It does something to you. Every time I leave a Circle of Love, and this is a warning I'm giving you, you'll be so intoxicated on love that you'll be hugging TSA people and strangers at the gas station, and it's very weird. But then again, I'm kind of like that anyway, so I'm just giving a disclaimer here. But it's all natural, he said, and it's all here for you. You will come first full circle before long. You'll come back to yourself. the origin of love itself. You'll realize the thing that I've been looking for, Ernest Holmes says, I've been looking with. The love that I've been looking for is the love itself that longs to be revealed. And so every time you say, I love you, it's the love loving itself. Wow. It's not egoic. It's not personal to you. It's not drop to drop love. It's an oceanic love, and it's all the same. That's why a lizard can experience the same love as a human. They're not separate. Whoa, I'm sounding crazy. Love is here. Love is always here. Somewhere between the euphoria and the darkness, she found you. And the very ground that you stand on is blessed. And you are safe once more. So cry, laugh, shake, vomit, doubt the ground. You will never be abandoned by your heart. Never. Whoa. He kind of gives you that 2x4 kind of love. Don't you like it? Tell the truth. Do you want to hear the truth? Good, good. Yeah. So love, sooner or later, love is going to get you. Could we open to that mystery of love when it starts to court us? You know, and it courts us in all different ways. So, you know, I have to ask that question. How do I surrender into love? How do I surrender? What is surrender anyway? Someone said, surrender happens when you're not there. What? Surrender happens when you're not there. Because if there's a you there, it will strategize and try to figure out, how am I supposed to surrender to love? Well, when you get out of the way and open to something that's always there, gratitude is one of the great ways to surrender to love. I am grateful for every moment that I'm alive. I'm grateful to wake up in the moment. David Stendhal Ross, that beautiful Benedictine monk, in his little essay on love, he lives in a monastery in Carmel overlooking the ocean. And he says, the beloved comes to me through my senses. So he says, I'll get up in the morning. And he says, and I'll look out the window and the birds are singing and the ocean's crashing against the rocks and the sun is coming down and I can feel the light of the sun and the smell of the ocean and the sound of the birds and the fragrance as I move through the garden, the fragrance of the lavender when I brush against it. My senses are alive. What if the beloved is revealing itself in this rendezvous with love? And then he says, the greatest prayer is yes, yes. And I give thanks for that. You know, we did an awful lot of work here yesterday, and this wisteria, which was such a beautiful thing when it's in bloom, can be invasive monster. Gigi shaking her head because it wants to strangle everything that can get a hold of. So in a loving way, we cut her back. We massacred her. And I was blowing some of the leaves back, and Gigi said, don't feed its roots. It'll just get stronger. And I thought, you know, there's truth to that. And yet there's something about having that relationship with it that's really kind of sacred. Anybody have a wisteria-like situation in their life? It's all a metaphor for life. And when we resist the very thing that we're struggling with, we give it power. So it's a whole different way of approaching life and what it gives us. To have the grateful heart to say, yes, this is here for me. And as much challenge as it is, like me with Trey at the very beginning, the payoff is quantum. When you can take the very thing that you have resisted and it can be the greatest blessing in your life, it's counterintuitive. You know, I'm still working on this whole thing with my Christian upbringing, because it was, you know, it was toxic for a little boy in South Dakota to be told every Sunday that he was an abomination in God's eyes for something he had no control over. And so just like with Santa Claus, I had to say, I'm going to let go of that. And yet when I read the teachings of Jesus, especially in the Gospel of Thomas, his whole message was about loving your even loving your enemy, to do good to those that do ill to you. And what he was saying was to embrace the shadow first within yourself and then embrace the shadow outside in the world, because it's all the same. And the only thing that can do it, according to Jesus himself, was love. And he was very clear that he wasn't the one that was doing. I and myself do nothing. It's the love within that does the work. Wow. So the message was clear all along, but it's not being presented, I would venture to say, right down here on Whitesburg and all the many churches. It's a message of unconditional love and acceptance, and to have a rendezvous with that in any way that you can find that rendezvous. So the last person that I want to share is, and I'm going to give this book to Tia. This is the class that I taught with Bandana Srivastava, the young lady that died very suddenly at a young age. And it's very funny because he's like a guru to me, John O'Donohue. He died at 52, a massive heart attack. But his writings live on. And when I was teaching this class at the other center, no, it was here. We just came here. It was the year 2000. I had to go off at a Circle of Love gathering, I think it was. And I was going to miss the last chapter. And the last chapter was about death. And it's very interesting. Jody Rutenberg was in the class, and so was Vandana Srivastava. And they shared that class and talked about death. Now, Jody came to the center because her friend Lindsay died in a car accident. And it was her very best friend. She was drinking. She went out drinking and driving. She was going fast, going to a bar, and she died in the accident. Well, wouldn't you know it, that Lindsay came to see Jody. It's like she was like haunted by Lindsay. They were so close. Vandana died shortly after she taught the class on death, and the whole premise, he says in here, is that you don't die. He quotes Meister Eckhart. Meister Eckhart would say, where do you go when you die? Meister Eckhart, the medieval mystic. Meister Eckhart says, you don't go anywhere. Where do you think you go? Somewhere up in the clouds? He says, you're still here, but you're not in the body anymore. So it's contingent on us then to expand that awareness to that love that's still here. And it's so funny that she and Jody were the ones that taught the chapter on love. But he talks about love in a way that's so beautiful. You know, he was a Catholic priest, and he left the priesthood after 19 years. And he says, I couldn't stay anymore. There was too much sin. You know, he said, I had to get away from the sin. And once he left the priesthood, then his ministry became global. Then he could speak a truth that would be called heretical by the church, but it was a truth that awoke from within him. So what if we are here to directly experience the organic truth of our own soul that will reveal it to you and me when we let go of the institution that supposedly we represent? So here's what he says. He says, a person should always offer a prayer of graciousness for the love that has awakened in them. To live with a grateful heart. Has love awakened in you? Has love awakened within you? Yes. So he says, the most gracious thing is you can offer that back to the world. We can change the world one heart at a time by sharing the love that is awakened. Very simply, he says, and when you feel love for your beloved and the beloved's love for you, now and again, you should offer the warmth of your love as a blessing for those who are damaged and those who are unloved. The greatest thing we can do for someone who's suffering is to offer them the love, not to fix them, not to have some idea that you need to do this and you'll get your life going. No, just to offer your love. And then he says, send that love out into the world to people who are desperate right now, to those who are starving, to those who are trapped in prison, to those in hospitals, and into the brutal terrains of bleak and tormented lives. And when you send that love out from the bountifulness of your own love, he says, it reaches the other people. This love is the deepest power of prayer itself. Well, isn't that nice to know that a nice Catholic priest is saying it's enough to just open your heart and send it out into the world where there might be suffering? Wow. The love knows how to do it. The love knows where to go. It's not you trying to fix the outer, but it's about you offering that oceanic love that you are to the world. Oh, is that enough? I don't know. What do you think? And lastly, he talks about prayer. This is from someone who said enough Hail Marys and Our Fathers probably to fill up this room. And he says, prayer is the act and the presence of sending this light from the bountifulness of your own love to other people, to heal them, to free them, and to bless them, to offer the bounteousness of your own being. You know, that's what you do every Sunday. I just open and I receive the bounty of your love. Glory G's right. Those revealing circles are just the unfolding of the one heart as it expresses. Oftentimes it's confusion, it's frustration. And when there is frustration, the love pours even more. How wonderful is that? And he says, and when there is love in your life, you should share it spiritually with those who are pushed to the very edge of life. There is a lovely idea in the Celtic tradition that if you send out goodness from yourself, or if you share that which is happy or good within you, it will all come back to you multiplied 10,000 times over. You know, when I do the offering affirmation, you know, and it returns to me multiplied abundantly, everything you circulate comes back to you. So what are you circulating? Are you circulating smiles? Are you circulating hugs? Are you circulating the abundance of what you are? Because it comes back to you. Or are you circulating doubt and fear and anxiety and judgment? Because that'll come back to you too. You've got to be ruthlessly honest with yourself. You know, and then he says finally, okay, the goodness of yourself, happy, good within you. Okay, he says, there is a lovely idea in the Celtic tradition that if you send out the goodness of yourself, it will come back to you, multiply 10,000 times. In the kingdom of love, there is no competition, there is no possessiveness, and there is no control. In the kingdom of love, there is no control. And lastly, he says, the love that you give away, the more love will come back to you. Love is the source, the center, and the destiny of our own experience. Love is our destiny of our own experience. Oh, here, Tia, I don't want to forget. It's a, yeah. So let's dive into that honeypot of love, shall we, together? I like the idea that Jeff Foster says, first it cracks you wide open. In our wonderful class, they're talking about the heart-mind. And it's not moving from the head into the heart, but it's knowing that the heart and the head work together simultaneously. So in the Sufi tradition, they talk about the winged heart and as a symbol of this love. And Gangaji talks about one of the wings of the heart is the wisdom of the heart. The heart knows oneness. And the other wing, which we must have, is the intelligence that exists within consciousness. So it's the head and the heart together allow this beautiful essence of love to fly. And so we invite the heart-mind to awaken within us. And in that heart-mind, we observe this felt awareness of love as a presence. In the Sufi meditation, they invite you to see in your mind's eye someone or something that you deeply love. That might be a pet or another human, where you feel this overwhelming felt sense of love. And they say, allow that feeling to expand within you. And now let the image to just dissolve and let that felt awareness of love sustain itself in that space. They call it the cave of the heart wherein God lies. And so now we are established in that vibrational field of love. This love knows no separation. And our opportunity is to say yes to it. In all circumstances, in our sadness, the love is there. In our confusion, the love is there. It's not trying to give us answers. It's just saying, I am here. I'm holding you in my embrace. When my teacher had his brain tumor, and I would see him, all he would do is cry. And he would say he wanted to be held, and I would hold him. So what if there's a part of us that is crying out to be held by love itself? And so this Sunday morning, we're having a rendezvous with that love, a love that never went anywhere, a love that was never born, and a love that will never die, a love that is always present. Last Christmas, I gave you my heart the very next day. You gave it away, but this year, without all the tears, I'm giving it to somebody special. Let's give that love to ourself, that special self within us that has been waiting for us our whole life. Not a love that can be taken away, but a love that never goes anywhere. And that is our rendezvous with love. It is deathless. It is eternal. And now I want you to see someone. Maybe it's your pet. For me, it's Baby Speck. Maybe it's Vandana Srivastava, someone who's no longer here in form. And feel the eternality of that love. Just feel it. Maybe it's your mother, your grandmother, your grandfather. Love doesn't die. And so it's our opportunity, our responsibility, and our challenge to open to a love that was never born and never dies, knowing that that is really, truly what we are. And when that awakens in this lifetime, it will never leave us, it will never forsake us, and it will remind us who and what we are. The very thing you've been seeking was there all along. And this Sunday morning, you're having your own rendezvous with this beautiful love that you are. Take a deep breath. Give a sigh. And know that it is so. So it is.
Listening to our podcast. For more information, please visit www.cslhuntsville.org. You are love and you are light. Namaste. Yeah.